I think when you realize that if everybody's an expert on social media, nobody's an expert on social media, and to just take everything with a grain of salt.
I think the thing that I've learned is just doing good reporting, being honest and trying to get all sides, understanding that there aren't two sides to every story, there are about 17 most of the time. How do we get at that?
Welcome everyone to another episode of Live Right Now. I'm so excited to share with you this interview I did with a journalist at the Idaho Capital Sun, Christina Lords, and explore the topic today of how can we know what is true? We live in such a information age where, especially with AI, it's so hard to know what is true that we find online. And to understand from the perspective of a journalist whose job it is to discover and share the truth about events. I met Christina on a trip to Boise, Idaho, where she told us about her work in journalism, and I asked if I could interview her, and she agreed to share with us. So please enjoy.
What's your podcast about?
It's called Live Right Now, Living in the Moment. It's based on three things: learning to see things as they really are, which is why I'm excited to talk to you about that, developing self-mastery and living what you know is true, and being a contributor and giving your gift to the world.
How cool. That sounds great. I'm glad you're doing that sort of thing. One of the things that I hope came across in our brief time together is flexing those muscles regularly, wherever you want to end up in your career, whether it's writing or audio or podcasting, doing that right now and kind of figuring out, like, am I capable of the rhythm of this? And like doing it every day, I think is like such an important thing to figure out kind of right now too, rather than like getting out into the world and then realizing like, oh, maybe this isn't what I want to do. And I just spent 4 years of my life like studying this. So I've seen it happen. But
that's really interesting. That's a wise perspective. Before we get into the topic, if you don't mind, just start us out, introduce yourself and maybe a little bit about your background and the kind of work that you do.
Okay, so I'm Christina Lords. I'm the editor-in-chief of the Idaho Capital Sun, which is a nonprofit, online-only news outlet focused on Idaho state politics and policy. I've been a journalist since I graduated from the University of Idaho in 2009. I did the whole student media thing in college and really found my people and tribe and started discovering that I really liked being in the room where decisions are being made and trying to help people understand the ramifications or impact of those decisions. I'm just kind of a nerd in a lot of ways, like politically or history-minded kind of brain. I will say that journalism isn't something that I always felt I was going to do. I had no idea in high school what I wanted to do with my life. Journalism is something I wrote down as an afterthought on my college application. I knew the writing and reading side of my brain was pretty good, and the math and science part of my brain was just not parts of my brain that I wanted to explore all that much. So I just kind of wrote down journalism as something that I thought would get me writing every day. Then had a couple of really good professors that helped me understand that my writing is good. And then here's how to add some reporting skills into what being a journalist is. So yeah, I've worked in mostly Idaho media in my career. I've worked in newspapers large and small, from little family-owned newspapers to corporate media owned by a hedge fund. And now I'm in the nonprofit world. So I've seen it all, I feel like, at this point. Maybe not all. I don't know. Every day is a winding road, especially in 2025.
Have you always been an Idaho girl?
Yeah. Fifth generation Idahoan on both sides. I've started to get into my genealogy in the last few years. I have Mormon pioneers on both sides from the early days of the church, coming up through Utah and then settling in Eastern Idaho. I lived 1 year of my life in Seattle and thought I was going to be in this bigger city and I was going to love it. And, I was going to have all these opportunities. And I felt like I was telling other people's stories and not my own there. I really wanted to come back home. I've never really had that drive to go work for the New York Times or, you know, a bigger publication. I really encourage people if that's where they want to be. But to me, it's like, I know Idaho pretty well. I've lived in all different parts of Idaho at this point and just really feel a connection to this space and making this place a better place to be as much as I can through the work that I do. So always been Idaho proud. I've been exploring more about my past lately in ways that's been kind of illuminating, but also really interesting. I've discovered that there's polygamy in my family, those sort of things, like just things that I'm like things are making more sense the more I know. I'm just super interested in history. I think of it like a big jigsaw puzzle, and each piece helps connect that picture. It helps me understand where I've come from and how Idaho came to be too.
That's beautiful. I'm right with you on family history, research, genealogy, and also I'm interested in history as well, and kind of like how maybe studying my own family history will help me understand the broader history of things. So can you tell us just a little bit about how we describe the work that you do?
So the Idaho Capital Sun is a nonprofit. So it has a little bit of different funding mechanisms and different fundraising. We focus on state politics, policy, and capital city issues, when I first started the Idaho Capital Sun, I was really trying to think about what are things that are going undercovered in Idaho? How can we help bridge the gap between people's understanding of what state government does and their involvement? We write a lot about how to vote, voter deadlines, things like that. Making sure that people know they can be involved in the political process is so important. And I think a lot of times people think of government and think of it as this big, complex thing that they don't really understand or have a foundation in. I can really relate to that because that's how I was too. I'm a first generation college student. My parents always had a newspaper subscription and watched the 5 o'clock news, things like that. But it's not like they were politically minded or anything. I will say that my mom always took me with her when she went to vote. I think that's where some of this comes from for me. As a little kid, I always got the I voted sticker. She went every election, not just the general election every 4 years for the president, but for every election she was there. And she really instilled in me that a lot of people fought very hard for her to be able to do that. And it's my responsibility to those people in our past that actively worked to get women the right to vote and other marginalized communities the right to vote. I think that that's still in the back of my mind, a driving factor why I do what I do. At the Capital Sun, we focus on the legislature, which tends to be in session between January and the end of March or early April. We send 3 reporters every day into the building to cover what's going on. And it's still not enough. There's so much that happens. So many bills are being introduced. Actually, we're this year on pace to be introducing more bills than we have in the last 5 years. So just a lot to cover. We focus on legislative politics, all the bills that are going through, voting issues. We also have a couple of reporters interested in writing about the environment, environmental policy, climate change issues, wildfire management, all of those things that really affect Idaho and cross into state and federal politics. And so we have someone dedicated to those issues, but we also have someone dedicated to healthcare and how that plays into state politics and policy. We're seeing lots of discussions about Medicaid and things like that. The governor just signed a bill this week that essentially disallows local government from instituting mask mandates. So those are the kind of topics that we're interested in covering. One question I get a lot is, why don't we cover education more? The Idaho Capital Sun, just so people know, is part of a network of other newsrooms under the State's Newsroom umbrella. That's our parent nonprofit. State's Newsroom has outlets, news outlets, all nonprofits focused on state politics, all of the 50 states, or they have a partnership with an already established nonprofit where we can share our content. I work for an organization that's really honed in on the fact that newsrooms are losing these reporting resources in ways that should scare all of us. They've dedicated their time and focus to state politics. We also have a nonprofit in Idaho called Idaho Education News. They do education reporting and we can pick up their work. I talk a lot about the news ecosystem. As we're looking at diminishing resources in our newsrooms across the state and country, how can we at the Idaho Capital Sun focus on different or undercovered topics more than just chasing the same storylines that everybody else is? That's why we don't have an education reporter, which was a hard decision because the state education budget is one of the largest budgets that legislators address. And there's always a ton of education related topics going on at the state house, but we just wanted to focus on a couple of other things. Sometimes we do really fun features. As long as it relates back to state politics and policy, we're trying to be as statewide as we can. That's a challenge just with the geography of Idaho and where we're all centered. We all live in the Treasure Valley, but we try very hard to highlight reporting from different parts of the state so people know what's happening in all corners of the Gem State we're interested in.
Thank you. I really appreciate that description of what you do. It's interesting to me to think about, you know, we talked about the idea of history. Mm-hmm. And as a reporter and a journalist, you're really writing history. I interviewed a historian once here at BYU Idaho, and he said that history is like, you can't describe everything that's happening all at once. Mm. You know, all history is narrative. History is written by those who write it, their perspective, what they knew and what they saw. So it begs the question of what history is worth writing and what's worth telling people. I want to dive into that topic and focus our conversation on how we learn to see things the way they really are. In my mind, there are events, right? Things that happen today apply to people today, at least impacted by those events. And then there are just truths. What would you say things that apply to everyone all the time, or truths that apply to select groups of people because it applies to their industry? Just starting a little more abstractly here in your work, what would you say is the connection between reporting on events versus sharing truths about events? Is there a place for that truth focus, or is it more about what's happening? You know what I mean?
Yes, I've been thinking a lot about this more recently, and I think this really came into focus for me during the pandemic and all of the misinformation that was flying around about healthcare and vaccines. Who's an expert? How do we decide what truth is? We're getting more and more siloed, taking off the journalist hat and just normal human hat. People ask me all the time, how do I know where to go to get information? Because there's so much out there. I think from a journalistic perspective, we can gather truth by physically and being present, by us being the people that are there. And that's become easier and harder because of things like Zoom and just being able to like watch from afar. But being in the room where things are happening is essential to say, I was there, I was an expert, here's what I saw. The other thing we rely on in journalism to talk about the truth is documentation, public records, and making sure that people have access to their government. Public records are one of the best ways that we can really combat misinformation and challenge people when they say that things aren't true or didn't happen the way they were. I'm constantly thinking about those things always. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what I do. When I first started out in the world in 2009, my first journalism job, I would say I'm a journalist, and people would be like, what? I've never met a journalist. Tell me about that. What's your favorite story? What's your favorite beat? What are you working on now? And I don't really offer that I'm a journalist to people now unless they really start asking, because I'm not sure how people are going to respond to that. It depends on the moment and the situation. I don't want to always have to explain myself, because now the questions are, oh, fake news. And it's just this kind of more adversarial tone that people take with me when I explain what I do, if I don't know them too well. I'm constantly trying to remember that what I do is being malaligned by folks out there. The president saying that journalists are the enemy of the American people. People listen to that and take him at his word, and it can be harmful to the process of what I do. When we talk about the media, there's another thing I like to, the media is a plural noun. There's a whole spectrum of what people consider the media. I really ask people to drill down into what are you actually talking about in that term. I think the thing that I've learned is just doing good reporting, being honest and trying to get all sides, understanding that there aren't two sides to every story. There are about 17 most of the time. How do we get at that? There's a lot of ethics that dictate how we do what we do. I think journalists are in this moment where we really have to be a little bit more self-explanatory about how we're gathering information, how long we spent on these things, and who we talk to. Talking about people's media literacy and what they understand about what we do is wildly different than 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So just trying to think about the 10,000-foot level.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think it's important to recognize that there are ways of knowing the truth about things. And I think that's why I'm so interested in your perspective as a journalist with social media. A lot of young people hear so many different things. It really hit home for me during COVID because I was hearing so many different people saying with such expert confidence that, but then I'd hear the same level of confidence saying the exact opposite. It was really frustrating to me. I was like, okay, everyone's just making everything up. Where is the truth? How do you know the truth about events? I get on X and I have my social media bubble, and I will only see things based on things I already believe in.
Yep.
It's designed to keep me just as engaged, as Elon Musk says, to have as little unregretted time as possible on the platform. Which is funny because I always regret wasting time on social media. It's like, how do you get out of that bubble? And so you mentioned a few things, getting multiple sides of the perspective, but if you could just kind of dive in for us, and what principles would you teach? What does it take to know the truth about an event or a person or a subject that people are trying to understand?
I think, especially if we're talking about social media, to go in with a healthy dose of skepticism with everything that you see and understand that the algorithm is tailored to you and your beliefs and hitting on your moral outrages. You know, everything about social media is designed to inflate. If you're a tech company, you want people to be sharing on your platform. That's just turned into this regurgitation of language, more and more hostile content. I would encourage anybody, and I have people all the time sending me things like, is this true? Do you know if this is true? I've been getting a lot of questions about the woman being dragged out of the North Idaho town hall in Coeur d'Alene. I don't know if you've read much about that, but people are just like, you know, I think when you realize that if everybody's an expert on social media, nobody's an expert on social media, and to just take everything with a grain of salt. And then I think if you're feeling like really want to share this, ask yourself why you're feeling an emotional reaction to whatever it is that you're seeing. The other thing I would encourage people to understand is that some of these really complex problems like immigration, healthcare, or diversity, none of those topics can be distilled down into a meme and be truly the full truth, right? There's so much that goes into how people feel about these things and the policies that are made around them that aren't just one sentence or aren't just a funny photo or aren't just a joke. You know, there's so much about our policy that is multidimensional. And I think in 2025, in the social media environment, we're constantly fed all of these images and funny things and irrational things or things to make you feel a certain way. You need a whole year to really digest some of these issues and to talk to the people who are affected by them. I think one of the best ways to get to the truth is to understand the implications and the outcomes of some of these policy decisions. Our lives are different because of it. I know how every single one of my Facebook friends feels about every single major American issue. That didn't used to be the case 20 years ago. We kind of knew. Christina is a little bit more moderate. Jane is a little bit more liberal. George is a little bit more conservative, but didn't know those finite details. Do we really need that level of understanding about each other? That's why we all hate each other, is because we're just like, well, they don't align with me on every single little issue, and so they're a bad person. And that's just not the full truth. That's not the full story of everything. It can be more of like a yes and sort of situation, I think would be healthier for us all. Yes, you feel this way, and I feel this way. And we can both be right. There's space for us to both be right and to have some compromise.
I think that's powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to a teacher who teaches conflict management, and he mentioned, we were talking about moral relativism versus absolute truth. He said that we should recognize is that idea of the yes and, that you can see some truth in an issue and I can see some truth in an issue, but neither one of us sees the full truth. Learning from one another's perspectives in more of a dialogue than a debate type of approach.
That's really interesting. I like that.
Go ahead. If you have any comments on that.
It's interesting because objectivity in journalism a lot. One of the things that my professors was, objectivity is a myth. Everybody that walks into an interview has feelings, their own lived experiences, frame of reference for why they feel what they feel. Oftentimes when I'm interviewing people I morally, politically, or socially disagree with, I tend to have better questions for them because I'm genuinely trying to understand how to that conclusion. What is the process in your brain that's leading you to think this way? Whereas when I'm interviewing people that I might agree more with, I tend to make more assumptions. I tend to not really probe why they think the way they think because I'm just assuming that's the same reasons I think the way I think. If you go into situations with people who disagree with you from a genuine place of curiosity, rather than outrage, there are some things just agree, but here, tell me why you feel the way you feel about that, because I don't understand it. Like, you can really find common ground and a better balance of this person isn't evil. It's just that they have a lived experience that's different than me. And there might be some truth in that experience. There might be some truth in my experience, but it doesn't mean that we can't find some common ground on it all. When we're talking about moral issues, that gets tricky, right? If you morally or religiously think about something in a certain way, it can be harder to bridge those gaps. We're in a very adversarial world right now, and it bums me out, honestly.
It is pretty sad. And it's interesting to recognize, I feel like people who have that approach to life is like, I just want to find the truth about things, and I'm not going to hate people. I'm just going to learn from them. I feel like they have a lot more peace in their life.
Right.
It does seem that we're all trying to reconcile with reality in one way or another, and that there does seem to be a sort of peace that comes with accepting what's true and working within that, instead of just trying to impose your own narrative on everything that happens in life.
I think I've been really trying to work on my mental health through all of this. There's a lot that I just tried to muscle through in the beginning of my career. That whole objectivity thing is a myth. Some of this isn't stuff you just muscle through. Some of this is really heartfelt. Sometimes people are really angry about the things I'm asking. I try to take better care of myself in those moments. And I got some good advice. I was actually on like a workshop, trauma response and how journalists are the receiving end of secondhand trauma in ways I didn't even think about. I've gone to murder scenes and had to talk to people in crisis. I just got in my car and walked away. I was fine. It's like, no, you're not fine. They said trauma is something that when you're talking to someone who's gone through it, think about it like putting it on a table and that you don't have to take it with you. And I think that's part of what we're dealing with our disagreements as a country and as a people right now. Like, put these things out on the table, be genuinely curious, examine, gather evidence, talk to people, talk to real humans about their experience. And then if you don't necessarily agree with that, you don't have to take that anger back with you. You can just leave it on the table. You don't have to absorb everything. You don't have to take things personally. When I talk to my parents about politics, my dad always ends up just yelling into the phone. And it's like, Dad, it's good to care about these things, but you don't have to attach it to your heart like this. You know what I mean? When we build that up, I really do think it leads to actual illness and bad vibes and karma. So many people walking around angry right now. Just leave some of that on the table. You don't have to internalize other people's disagreements. The world keeps spinning, and we're a very small part of it at the end of the day.
I love that. I love that a lot. By the way, I wanted to mention that I do target my content for a Christian LDS audience. So if you have any sort of religious perspectives or thoughts, you're free to share those as well.
Do you know what's, religion is such a strange topic for me. Both sides of my family were raised in the church, went to church every Sunday, did the seminary thing. My parents ended up taking a different path and fell out of going to church. They were always open with me. If this is something you want to do, find ways for to do it. I was never raised going to church every Sunday. I genuinely, for most of my life, when people ask me, what are you? It's such a strange question for me to answer because I don't really know. For a lot of my life, I've always just said I'm agnostic. I don't talk a lot about this with other people, but since you asked, I don't know if there's a God out there, and I don't know if he's operating in the same way that organized religion tends to teach. I do believe in karma. I do believe good begets good. I do believe in treating other people the way you want to be treated. I think those are all godly ideas, right? But am I going to church every Sunday to have someone tell me that? No. And honestly, the older I get, the more I'm like leaning into from like agnostic to like true atheism of like, maybe this, it isn't out there. But I've always told myself, like, be open to the moment, like be open to like, if God comes down and he's standing in front of you and that's your real life lived experience, like fall into that. It just hasn't happened for me. I really find spirituality in other things like dancing and being in nature. I had this epiphany probably 3 or 4 years ago of like this term, God is love, right? What does that mean? If being kind to one another, loving your neighbor, even when you're disagreeing, taking the high road, if that's God, I'm totally down with that. I don't know how to answer that question. I find myself in my heart always wondering, and death has always scared me because of that. I'm always like, what's going to happen? If I don't have this figured out by the time I go, what's going to happen to me? Will anything happen? I don't know. I just don't know. And so I've always just been open to these things. If there's some life-changing event that happens to me where it's like, here it is, then here it is. But so far, I'm just trying to lead a life that I can, in 20 years, look back on and be proud of and just treat people with respect. So that's kind of my relationship with whatever God is. And I think it might be a lady up there. I just really think about, and actually it's my partner. His name's Busani. He's from Zimbabwe. He was raised Seventh-day Adventist and stuff. And we talk a lot about this because he's also stepped away from that church, but he really believes that our soul lives on. And I've been thinking about that more and just like, and I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, like, if you're doing good works, people will remember those things. And I think that that's a spiritual thing, that you're bringing goodness into the world. Like if there is a God in whatever form he or she takes or it takes, just as if you're on the good path, genuinely trying your best to be kind to people and take care of each other and donate to charity and do all the things that we should be doing for each other. That memory will live on and your soul will live on and you don't actually die in those moments. So I've been thinking more about that too, of just what is your legacy going to be that you leave with people and how does that get remembered?
I think that's a beautiful thought. And what I'm hearing from what you're talking about is it's kind of like self-evident truths, like how we should treat people and that pursuit of meaning that we're all having. And I think it is interesting that we do take things personally, you know, that we hear in the news and we apply it to ourselves and we're trying to find some sort of meaning in life. And that's why I try to make that distinction between what are those things that are just transient events and what are those things that are true for everyone or eternally true, like no matter where you are in life, it's always going to be true for you. And maybe just to open that up to you, what are some of those things that you're learning that are just true about life? What are some of those deeper truths that you feel give meaning in life?
I've actually been actively thinking about this since the inauguration, right? Because in what I do, there have been long days. I haven't worked shorter than a 12-hour day since the legislature started. So I've been working 60-hour weeks since really trying to, how am I going to cope with all of this chaos? If we're looking at it through a work lens of how do we cover all of these fast changing policy things and its effects, like here's the policy change. And then we have to talk to the people that it affects. And then there's the lawsuits that inevitably come from. It's just this weird cycle that we're in. I've been really trying to enjoy my weekends, enjoy my evenings, find my sense of self outside of being crunched over the laptop for 12 hours a day. I think I'm really focusing on reaffirming and like rebuilding and repairing my relationships with people, because I think that's truly the only way out of some of this is to just remind ourselves that we can be doom scrolling. I doom scroll for 12 hours a day. I get paid to do it. There's just more to life than that. We have to remind ourselves to connect with people, be with the people that we love and are going to build us up and support us, put ourselves in different spots outside of our comfort zone to truly lean into the happy parts of life and enjoy those moments. I'm just trying to set a goal of once a week, am I connecting with a friend? Am I making sure that I'm talking to my mom? My grandmother is getting ready to pass. She's my last living grandparent. How can I be there for her a little bit more? And she's going through dementia and she's very confused right now. How can I make her feel less alone in her illness right now? I think what I do is an important job. And it's one of those jobs that people kind of self-identify with. Like I'm a journalist, you know, I'm changing the world some kind of way. I'm also a friend, a girlfriend, a daughter, and these other things that make you whole. Leaning into dancing in your kitchen. I do that every Saturday since the pandemic. Put on some music, get down with your spatula. Find ways to be joyful. There's a lot bringing us down right now. And we need each other. I keep looking at how angry people are at each other. When we're all yelling at each other, we're not fighting for solutions. We're fighting each other. There's so much more to life than that. So touch the grass. That's my motto for 2025. Go out and touch the grass and remind yourself that there is goodness in the world.
Yeah, that's really a challenge sometimes.
I mean, we do get
stuck into things. Thank you for that reminder, because I think ultimately it does come down to just those fundamental things, our relationships with other people and finding meaning in life. I think we're all kind of forming our own little mental model of life. I like to think of it as a map. We learn a little bit about this thing and that, you know, goes into our map. I don't know if you've ever played any video games, and some of those games you walk through and your map gets built as you're walking and it only shows the areas you've been to.
Right.
And I think I think we all have a map like that of life, like what brings meaning, joy, what happened at the inauguration, what's true about Donald Trump, what's true about abortion, and what should I do about whatever subject it is. I do also think about how most everyone knows almost nothing about almost everything.
Right.
And we know a little bit about some things.
That's totally true. I think that's why I'm so interested in history all the time. How the heck did we get here? Like, what are the pathways? Like, these things aren't coming out of nowhere, right? I tell young reporters, just because you walked into this new city council that you're covering for the first time doesn't mean there's not 100 years of history behind you that you're going to have to figure out as to how this body got here, how this president got here, how these court decisions are happening. There's so much in the back view that would help us understand the present that we just don't focus on anymore. And that's really sad to me. But yeah, I think you're totally right there.
I appreciate that, because understanding history helps us understand the present moment.
Yeah.
I wonder if you wouldn't mind kind of taking an event, a current event, and help us and just talk to me about like how you try to understand the truth about that event, and if there's any that come to mind.
So one of my first stories that I worked on that was really multifaceted, a lot of people disagreeing on topic. It was right out of college, working for the Moscow Pullman Daily News, was the Upper Lhokhsa Land Exchange. There was the Forest Service, old railroad land, and environmentalists. How are we going to use the land is what it all boiled down to. I remember these environmentalists were calling me at 7 a.m. on a Sunday, I need to be at this thing. And then I couldn't get a hold of the Forest Service to hear their side of things at all. So I just started going to these town halls that were being held. The environmentalists were hosting their own rallies, and the Forest Service was holding information on all the documents, the draft environmental impact statement. I was sweating bullets the night before that story ran. It took me 2 weeks to write it, went through massive edits. It was a huge long, and I was trying to make this really complex issue understandable. All these people, and trying not to make any of these people mad at me. It really is laying out, like, critically thinking about what are the motivations behind what each group is telling me? What are the documents showing? What's the science showing? What are the economic implications of what this decision is going to be? It goes back to the idea, like, nothing can be distilled down into a meme that's like a real topic. There's just no way to get at really controversial stuff without listening and talking and gathering information. I think you just have to be willing to do a little bit of legwork. And this is what I get a little peeved when people are like, it's so hard to vote. It's so hard to follow government. And it's like, yeah, it is. But maybe just take 5 minutes out of your day and read the news a little bit. Go to a hearing so that you understand it. Like, make the time to. I think that's what our suffragettes and the Martin Luther Kings of the world were really fighting for, involved populace. We shouldn't take their sacrifices and efforts lightly that we just don't do it. They fought so hard that we understand our government and have access to it. It's on us to say, okay, it's my responsibility to figure some of this out. I think we're in the kind of like, it's just being spoon-fed to us on social media vibe that like, you got to do your own homework sometimes, and you got to show up in these places and actually listen to what people are saying. And you know, I guess another event that comes to mind is in college, I went to cover this abortion lecture. It was this woman who was anti-abortion, and all of the things that she was saying are things that I had never heard before. Her point was, if we don't want women to have elective abortions, let's make it easier to raise a family in this country. And it was just kind of like, yeah. Why are women having elective abortions? Because they can't afford their children. They can't have a diaper changing room at a college university. Where are we going to put our efforts? Is it always demonizing people who get this procedure? Or can we make policy changes, make it easier for women to have children? It shifted my thinking of like, yeah, what if a woman is going to college and she needs to be able to breastfeed her kid? What if she needs childcare? What if she needs a place to go? Or a man, why are we not putting more diaper changing station in men's bathroom? Like, let's just make it easier for people to take care of their children. It doesn't have to be this massive decision where we're making a really tough choice. No matter what the outcome is, it's a tough choice for anybody. I just think be in the room where it happens, like in Hamilton. You've got to take a little initiative and decide, I'm going to figure this out. And it's not as scary as and intimidating as people make it out to be sometimes.
That is interesting. A couple of things come to mind with that. I mean, number one, I've been learning recently about just how addicting our world has become and how we're being spoon-fed things. Actually, changing our brains. We're getting so used to instant gratification that normal life feels hard. We're living in a dopamine deficit state. A lot of us are, whether you're scrolling social media, eating junk food, have an addiction, or just watching TV, all sorts of things are designed for instant gratification and reward us very easily. In a hunter-gatherer world, we would not be rewarded right away for so little effort. And I think we've gotten so used to getting an answer from Google that we don't really want to get the answers about things. Can you speak to that instant gratification world we live in and the effort it takes to actually find the truth about something? What are your thoughts on that?
I think you're right on. I think we really need to think about setting limits to our exposure to some of this stuff. I used to be on the internet all the time. I loved being funny, having funny posts, making people laugh. But I really stepped away from that world in ways that, like, it's more healthy for me. Actually, looking at it through a journalism perspective, breaking news is a good example. I see this happen a lot with mass shootings or big breaking news event like that where a tragedy has struck. And the 24-hour news cycle is similar to that, you know, regurgitation of the doom scrolling, and everyone wants instant gratification. And everyone wants to know what happened right away. And then you've got, you know, the person outside of the school that was just shot up, like just trying to fill the space, you know, of like, you don't know what's happened. You got there 5 minutes ago. The police have no idea of what's happening yet because we need investigation. We need time. We need context. We need to interview people. We need to gather our own information. But I think when we're living in this world where everything is just readily available, or I can go on Amazon and buy whatever it is, you know, you're not really thinking about, do I actually need this right now? Can we allow the people in charge to do their jobs and gather the information before we start accusing people of being X, Y, or Z, and this is why this happened 5 minutes after it happened? You know, just think we need more of a conscious effort to say, I might not get the answers I need right away, but the time and the investigation part of those topics, they deserve like cooking time, you know, they deserve time to be figured out. We're not going to have all the answers instantaneously all the time. That's part of life. And to just stop really caring about your social media footprint and how many likes you get and those sort of things, and just start caring more about, does this help people understand their world, or am I being a good person in this moment? And really taking gratification, just doing the good deed rather than getting the like for the photo of the good deed. You know what I mean? Like, let's get back to that a little bit more than where we're at right now.
Yeah, it seems like we're in a very abstracted world. We go to the grocery store and buy it. We never saw the cow that was killed, and or the farmer that grew the wheat that made the bread that we bought off the shelf.
Right.
And it's interesting. We are becoming so disconnected from reality, even to the point of creating virtual reality. It's really hard to make that argument to people that it's worth it to live in the real world and find the real truth about things when you can live in a virtual world, you know, in a mentally virtual world where you just see things however you want to see them. And you'll get so much validation for that, because all you got to do is find your group of people that believe things the same way. And then you feel like that's what the truth is. But
I think that's a good observation. Because I think on social media, we're always presenting our highest and best selves. Some people are vulnerable on social media, and that can be very powerful. But it's like the happy couple that was fighting 5 minutes on the car ride over to that cute dinner they're sitting at. That's not the whole story. Social media is not the whole story. Michelle Obama tells this funny story about famous photo of her and Barack. She was like, 5 minutes before that, we were at each other's throats. And we're like, look how cute we are. That really stuck with me, because like, that's what social media is. And so it's like, I just think we're in this overshare moment too, of like, people need to know everything about me. No, they don't. Sometimes what makes life special is like having a little secretive moment, or just knowing kind of what you're talking about, like knowing what the truth is in your heart. You don't need to always blast that out on social media and be revalidated. Just standing in your own boots and understanding what makes you happy and what makes you good. You don't need other people to tell you that. Like, find ways to build that in yourself, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for exploring that subject with me of how to learn to see things as they really are and understand the truth about events. More importantly, discovering the truths of life, you know, the lessons of life that we're all eventually, the lessons we're all eventually gonna learn. Hopefully we all learn that it's important to be nice to people and that family and relationships are the most important things. It's okay to be patient and understanding. And, you know, whatever those lessons are, and I get to think of like a question is like a bucket, you know, and you go through life with it. And hopefully through life, you keep your questions open and you keep filling that bucket and you don't let go of your questions until you found a satisfactory answer. You don't just go for that Google search answer. Mm. I just want to ask you if you have any last thoughts on that topic, and then we'll go to our final question.
Yeah, I think just finding ways to be more physically present in the world, whatever that means to you, whatever your job, you know, maybe you're not going to be a journalist, or maybe you're going to go do something totally different. Or maybe you're working on real relationships with your mom or your boyfriend or whatever the case may be, like just to be physically observational and then just question everything. Really have a curiosity in your mind of why are the things they are the way they are? How can I look at, you know, maybe I should read two or three stories on the same subject and see what each of those things said and then kind of suss out the themes or the truths there. Or, you know, where can I find concrete information and experts that will help me understand this? And then, like you said before, I think like just never assume that you know it all. Like there's so much out there that that we don't have personal experiences with. I think about like the immigration topic right now is just a hostile buzzword and things like that. But I would just really encourage people to remember where these people are coming from and how can we make sure that we're taking care of our neighbors in those moments and advocate for real change and advocate for good policy. And, you know, people do need to follow the law and those sort of things. But how can we humanize these issues a little bit more than just a headline, which, you know, is funny coming from a journalist. But like I said, there's just so much more that goes into some of these huge topics that we're all fighting about that that can't just be distilled down into one side. You know, it's a yes and. There's multiple rights in the same topic.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. The last topic or question I want to ask you is kind of going back to what we were talking about before. And it's a question I like to ask everyone is, well, I guess I'll preface it with this, that knowing that life is short and that anything could happen to anyone and we could die at any time, how should we live right now?
A very good question. I don't know why I'm thinking the way my brain is taking me this way, but like I used to have a lot of road rage, like a lot of road rage and swearing and all these things. And I've just been trying to like get out into the world in ways where I'm not assuming that I know what other people's motivations are. Why is this person cutting me off? Why is this person going slow? All of these things. Like, does it really matter? They're not going to hear me yelling and swearing at them from, you know, shaking my fist at the sky from behind them. I just like, can't we just go through our lives a little bit easier and talk to the cashier in a way that isn't rude or like understanding where they're coming from or, you know, not cutting people off in traffic and being jerks and just like, can't we just take a breath more and approach life in a kinder way? I'm trying to understand more often, like when people do like today, what happened in JFAC, like people screaming at each other and stuff like that. Like, can we understand that everyone is stressed out right now? Nobody is really feeling certain about the future. Nobody really knows what's going to happen. Everybody's upset. Can we go out into the world with that perspective a little bit more and live in a more understanding way? Give people a little bit more grace. Can we talk to people that we disagree with without having complete come aparts? You know what I mean? Like, I think it just gets back to that idea of like, I don't know what the afterlife is. I don't know what people are going to say at my funeral, but I hope it's that people that I made people laugh and smile. And that they know that I took care of them, that I'm a loyal friend. Like, can we live a life where When we look back in 20 years, we'll be proud of our moment and be proud of ourselves of like, man, I was really going through it. And look where I am now, like doing a little bit more self-reflection that way, and being kinder to ourselves. I think we're always on this, like the social media stuff of like always presenting that I'm happy and put together and know what I'm doing. And that's all a lie. Like I go to bed every night thinking like, holy crap, what did I do today? How did I make a difference? Like, what have I got to do tomorrow? But like, just giving myself grace of like, I'm living a life that I can be proud of and a one with full of kindness and hopefully helping people understand some of these complex issues, like just be more introspective than blasting everything out into the world, I think is where I'm trying to be a little bit more. And I'm a very opinionated person, very loud person, very talkative person, but, you know, giving people, other people space, I can still be, you know, I'm so sorry, I'm going to mess this up, but the like, you know how people can take the personality quizzes and it gives them the like, I'm the INFJ or whatever it is, whatever that is, I'm the debater. Like that's my like social, what they think that I am after I took that test. And I've been thinking about that a lot of like, do you want to be right? Or do you want to be happy is a question that I ask myself a lot. I like to be both, like, you know, but I think like, I'm trying to lean into the more just peaceful, happy spot in life. I don't know. I just think a lot of people are really suffering and hurting and are angry. And I think that just asking people how their day is going can go a long way, or just doing the kind deed, or, you know, our next door neighbor just had a baby and we've never spoken to them, but we went to the store and was like, here's a little care package, stuff like that. You know, people just need a reminder that life is worth living and people are kind and good at the end of the day. Like, there's so many forces telling us that we're not those things. And I just am fighting that as much as I can.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for fighting for the truth and trying to be a good force in the world. I believe it does have a difference. And a personal note, it was encouraging to me when I went on that networking trip and met you with those other students, that, because I was like, oh yeah, journalism isn't dead. Yes.
Right. Yeah, it's changing. It's taking different forms. You know, I don't think people are waiting for the news to show up on their front door at 6 a.m. anymore in the paper form. You know, families aren't sitting down to the 5 o'clock news in the way that they used to, but it still has a place and a purpose. And everybody that's still doing this at this point that I know is genuinely just trying to help their community understand what's going on around them. You know, I think some of what we do has been demonized to the point where I have to have those conversations with people, or I have to be a little bit more nervous about talking to strangers about what my role is or what my job is. But I also feel more motivated to do this job than I have in years. And I think it's because people are desperate for information. And I always tell people, like, we send people into the Capitol building every day, so you don't have to, like, you don't have to go to there, like, you know, and there is expertise that comes with what we do. And I hope people remember that about journalism, is that, you know, we do have a code of ethics. We do have ways of researching and, you know, fairness issues and that sort of stuff of that guide us, that it's not all caution to the wind over here at the Idaho Capitol Sun, at least. So like, we really do care about getting it right. We correct ourselves when we're wrong. We try every opportunity to get people to talk to us so that they have an opportunity to say what's on their mind or to respond to things in the newspaper. I tell young reporters all the time, like, nothing should ever be a surprise to anybody that is mentioned in a story in a newspaper. Like, everyone should have the opportunity to respond and give their say. That's our job, is to gather and collect that information and put it out to the world. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. It's a love-hate relationship I have with this job sometimes. And I'm just kind of at a peak lately, more than I've been in a valley, and I'm appreciative of that.
Well, I think that's awesome. And I think that people need that perspective and the understanding that you shared. Where can people find out more, or kind of see your work and find out more about what you do?
So IdahoCapitalSun.com, we're an online-only publication. Sometimes I get the question of, will you ever have a print product? And I just don't see that happening. But yeah, we do post all of our stories there. We also have a newsletter that goes out 6 days a week, and we're a nonprofit. So if you do find value in our work, like I tell people all the time, like journalism needs support right now. It needs financial support and readership.
Thank you. You mentioned that because we want the news to be unbiased, and we mm-hmm. want to know that we can trust where it's coming from. And I think that, you know, what you shared today helps give that encouragement, that is the core motivation is helping people understand the truth about issues and getting multiple perspectives and making sure that the people that are sharing their views know that what you say about what they say is how they meant it.
Right. Right. It's a big part of our job. And I think most journalists I know really try hard to do that. Like, I think that's the goal, at least in the Idaho journalism that I see. And again, the media means a lot of things. What, you know, I would ask people to be very specific when they start throwing that term around of what they mean, and understand that there's real human beings on the other side of what that means and what we do, and that we work really hard to make sure that people just have access to this information. So.
Awesome. Well, Christina, I think that you have a wealth of perspective and experience and insights, and I hope to stay connected.
Like that. You've given me a lot more to think about. Definitely, for sure. So I appreciate the conversation. It was really wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much.